today's show. Did Dan Lanning really mean it? Georgia, Texas, Tennessee, Alabama, pressure cooker, plus race for the case.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Let me tell you what, if I was a coach, we would find every rule to cheat.
Russ Gellinger.
So maybe chestnut checkers, he's, oh boy, that 12-man on the field, you know, trying to like, you know, kind of kid around with the media, making sure all the media know, dang, you know.
And SI's Pat Forty.
So like, oh my gosh, Alabama's playing badly under Bill Currier. It's playing badly under this coach, DeBose, whatever. And you're looking stuff up. Everything bad goes back to ears.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. A delicious weekend of games. We're going to talk Georgia, Texas. We're going to talk Alabama, Tennessee. We're going to talk a whole bunch of games that intrigue us. Nebraska, Indiana, who had that?
Yeah, I know. Pivotal Big Ten game.
It's the great Mike Kloss of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. I think that's how you properly say his last name. He said, I didn't have that on my bingo card because I don't play bingo. That's what he was, one of his lines he always has. Just true. I don't play bingo either. But we're going to get to all that. We'll get to race for the case. Quickly, though, we want to get back to the big 12th man, LaFaire, 12th man, 12th defender in the Oregon-Ohio State game. The NCAA has moved with unbelievable speed and has already issued a new procedures.
What are you talking about, Dan? They always move quickly.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Take like 7 years to investigate whether someone got a ham sandwich illegally. But they got this done quick. 10 seconds left in the game on, I assume most people know the situation, but Oregon gets called for a 12th man on the field. It's a 5-yard penalty, but Ohio State wasted 4 precious seconds running a play that it was an incomplete pass. Will Howard to Jeremiah Smith got knocked down. The penalty, you can take the penalty 5 yards, but you have the choice of returning the time on the clock, which would have given Ohio State 2 plays. And then when Will Howard scrambled for 12 to try to get into field goal range, they would have had time to call timeout. Ohio State would have had a chance to win the game with the kick. This took on a whole bunch of momentum. People have said Dan Lanning did it on purpose. Dan Lanning has not really said that. He just sort of laughs and brushes aside. I have significant doubts that he did it on purpose. But I credit him with taking print the legend. If everyone's calling you a savant and a genius, I know because I'm just often called that. Sometimes I deserve it. Sometimes I don't.
Which times did you deserve it?
I don't know. No one's ever called me a savant and a genius, but if they did, I would just say, yes, I did that. If your wife says, hey, good job doing something, you're like, I didn't do that, but okay, yeah. You're not going to tell her no? I'm sorry. I didn't rake the leaves. This is a big wind came and blew him away. I don't know. Anyway, I don't believe he did that on purpose, but Pat, your thoughts on all of this?
I agree with you. We wrote similar columns today, basically, that... If somebody wants to hail your coaching acumen, it's not your job to talk them out of it, right? Compared it to the accidental invention of the microwave, like 1945, a scientist, they were testing like radiation, and he was working with a vacuum tube and ended up melting a chocolate bar in his pocket. It's like, hey, look at that. This thing heats up food. Maybe we got something here.
Really?
So this was, I looked it up.
What? Okay.
About that?
I'm glad we're in agreement on something because, you know, we're smart
we
people.
Are.
What was it for you that made you say, yeah, this isn't, he didn't mean it?
A couple things, but one, I said on the pod, I think Sunday and Tuesday, that I ended up on the elevator at Autzen Stadium with the Oregon coaches, and one of them was grumbling and cussing about the 12 men on the field. And either that coach wasn't in on the stratagem, the brainstorm, or it was a mistake. And they were not happy about the mistake. And then all of a sudden they were getting credited for a great mistake. So that, and then the non-confirmation confirmation from Dan Lanning has not come out, as you noted too, Dan, and said, yeah, that was the plan. He's just kind of gone with it. And the third thing is that it seems very simple that if Ohio State completes the pass, you decline the penalty and your stratagem is easily foiled. Jeremiah Smith catches the ball. You've gained 13 yards. The clock stops because of the penalty. You move on. And if it's that easy, then I think it's not a very good strategy to say we're just going to put a 12th guy out there and everything's going to be fine. So kind of combine those elements, and I am calling bulkaka.
Yeah, I think everyone fell for the okey-doke here. We'll let Ross be the judge, maybe. I don't know what Ross' opinion, but look.
Oh, no.
Here's the play. So they put 12 on the field, supposedly on purpose. If you watch the play, they have trips right, like a bunch of receivers right, and they put the extra cornerback over there to take that away. Now, if you're going to get extra players on the field, why not have 14 of them? Why not have 15, 20? Don't put one extra guy. When you take away, if that the goal, the plan was, we're going to take away this formation. So Will Howard goes back. He immediately looks right to where he's got three receivers, and it's a mess because maybe there's an extra defender. Well, where is Will Howard going to go? What are you forcing Will Howard's decision to be? Go left to Jeremiah Smith, who happens to be probably the number one receiver in the country and the number one weapon on Ohio State, who is in essentially man-to-man coverage. They have a safety deep to make sure, obviously, he's not going to break one for a touchdown, but he catches the pass, as Pat said. He runs a route to the 27-yard line. Will Howard is actually very late on the throw. If he throws it on time, Jeremiah Smith catches the ball in the 27. Jabbar Muhammad has to now tackle this 215-pound, force to take him down, and they're kicking without even trying, they're sitting there at a 44-yard field goal, which is now kind of in the range. He may get two more yards. He may get four more yards. That's the game plan? One-on-one, Jeremiah Smith? If Will Howard throws it on time, Buckeyes might win the game. I don't see how in the world this would be the act of a genius that says, I've got a plan. Now, if they put 14 guys out there and they double-team Jeremiah Smith and they added all these things and it doesn't, the idea of the extra defender is it forces the play not to work. Jabbar Muhammad made an unbelievable play. Granted, he was able to break on it because the pass was late and knock down the pass. But how is this a good play?
Yeah.
All right. Hold on. Let me take each of these things one by one. I'm not being the judge here.
Okay, play devil's advocate.
Devil's advocate. Yes, I'm taking the other side just for the sake of taking the other side here and offering an argument. Okay. Number one, Pat's story. Pat gave us two options of the coach in the elevator, mm-hmm. right? One option was that he obviously was cussing because he was angry at having 12 men on the field and they really didn't do it on purpose. Or he wasn't cued in, right? He wasn't in on the scheme. There's a third option, Pat. You mentioned they got on the elevator and knew there was media there and kind of quieted down. So maybe Chestnut Checkers, he's, oh boy, that 12 men on the field, trying to kind of kid around with the media, making sure all the media know, I don't know. That's
like four-dimensional chess.
I know. It's not out of the question. Here. Come on, man.
How many assistant football coaches you know who are that?
Trying to cover it up. Okay. Trying to cover it up. All right.
No.
Dan, there was a safety over the top to help with Jeremiah. He was coming down. So it was one-on-one man coverage there, but there was a safety right there to potentially.
It was dog coverage, yes. He called it dog coverage.
Dog.
He was there to help not break up the play, though. It was to tackle Jeremiah Smith.
Yeah, true.
We watched the play. Will Howard throws that ball early. Yeah. It's caught at the 27. Smith's got to come all the way back to the 30. I just That's a risky-ass genius play. Let me just put it that way.
The third thing you talk about, well, if you really want to do this the right way, you put, 14, 16, 18 on the field, whatever. Come on, man. Like, I think there's a possibility here of getting away with this, right? And so you can't get away with this with 16, but maybe you could actually get away with it and the official doesn't see. And you go through a play, without, if you just put one more on there, you go through the whole play with 12. I don't know. Just playing devil's advocate. Not saying I believe one way or the other. I'll be honest. I heard him Monday. I was like, he did it intentionally. Okay. All right.
Say that.
And then the next day, when we kind of talked about the pot, we talked on the pot, Pat told this story and I kind of thought about it more. And I'm like, I wonder if he really did do it intentionally. And then I did see this morning he was on Dan Patrick.
I saw that.
And he didn't say much again. Mm-hmm. There was no confirmation. He kind of danced around it and wanted to move on as quickly as possible. So this whole thing's taken a life of its own.
It's wild.
I told Dan this, but, when we talked Tuesday morning about it on the pod, it gave me the idea of, wait a second, I wonder if the rules committee or NCAA is going to do anything. And right when we hopped off the pod, rang up Steve Shaw and he I quoted him in a story about what's going on a little bit. And he basically suggested what they're going to do. He wouldn't really confirm it, but that they were going to release this rules interpretation, because apparently this thing had not just spread media wise nationally, just fans and media, but the coaching community was in an uproar over this, and plenty of coaches were going to for sure use it later this season. So the rules committee had to jump in and do something, and they did.
That is true.
Out of your competing theories there, Ross, I think the third one, especially kind of the way they did it, maybe makes the most sense to me. Like, they're just going to slip him out there and see if anybody noticed.
And they did. You saw the replay, right? He just stepped out really quickly.
Out late, and he doesn't go very far off the sideline. That's the problem. Like, if you're going to run 13, 14 guys out, it's going to be blatantly obvious. And
what?
The other team's, I'm not sure I'd even snap the ball if I was the other team. I'd just look over there and point at him and say, flag it.
You got to snap the ball or it's not a flag.
Then snap it and spike it immediately.
You got to do that, but you got to count on them coming in. I don't know. Yeah. I'm just saying, the goal was to have it go to Jeremiah Smith.
Yeah, I mean, that's not what you want by any means. But again, I think the goal was just, hey, if we can get a 12th guy out there. I think they screwed up. They had players running off and on from the front seven to the down linemen were in and out. It looked like a fire drill. It looked like they came out of the timeout confused. I think it was an honest mistake that they're getting credit for genius for.
Yeah.
Unless Ross's thing is right, where they just slip him out there.
I love this thing because it's completely pointless. Okay. Oregon won the game, deserved to win the game. Right. Good for Oregon. Yeah. There was plenty of ref mistakes in the game that could have favored Oregon.
Yeah.
Ohio State wasted too much time on the drive. Didn't know what was, all sorts of stuff went wrong. So please, I'm not taking anything from Oregon. I just don't know that how about this? On the next play, why not do it again? Okay.
Yeah.
Instead,
game can't end on a defensive penalty, right? So you wouldn't want to, if the time expired, they would get a free play.
They would get a free play, or the play would go 4 or 5 seconds. And they'd only have either the chance to throw a Hail Mary or kick what would be about a 50 to 51 yard field goal, depending where they lined it up. Because the ball was 3rd and 20 at the 38. So would have gotten moved up to the 33. Ohio State's kicker, it only hit 40 this year. Now you're getting into some risky territory, but do you run it again? Do you run it earlier in this drive and kill time? They had them at the 37 yard line, Ohio State's own 37 with 51 seconds. I don't know. The idea that there was a mistake in a hectic end of the game scenario and it all kind of worked out because Ohio State didn't convert Jeremiah Smith was open, or Dan Lanning made I heard Urban Meyer say, in 38 years, it never dawned on me. Dan Lanning had the strike of all time genius and called it at the exact time and it worked.
Yeah.
I'm going Oxen's razor here.
Yeah.
But good for Dan Lanning. I take the credit.
Yes,
take the win.
Take the credit. Always. Yeah. Always take the credit. You know, like how many people, you know, you could name like a great baseball player or something that came, I don't know, Dominican Republic, whatever. How many people have taken, I was the one that scouted him. Mm-hmm. Oh, I was the one that saw him. I knew he was going to be great. You know, that sort of thing. When people offer you the credit, by golly.
Take the credit. Great win for Oregon.
Well, the Lanning rule now exists either way.
So what do you think of changing the rules in the middle of the season?
It's not changing the rules, Dan. It's an interpretation of the rule.
Kind of seems like
it's such a bunch of bulls.
Even Terry McCauley, the former NFL referee who tweets quite a bit, he's been tweeting about this all week, and he mentioned that this is they're going to call it an interpretation, but even him, he was like, this is a rule change. What do I think about the rule, the change, or the interpretation?
I mean, the change is fine, but should you change the rules in the middle of the season or not?
Yeah, I think they felt like they had to do it based on the conversations with, because I think this is my understanding of kind of how this went, is coaches at virtually every school were going to their administrators, right? Like, hey, what is going on with this play? Like, we're going to run this play. We need to find out more about this play. And then the administrators are going to commissioners. And then commissioners, I think, had a hand in getting the rules committee going. And Steve Shaw watches. He's got at his house in Birmingham, he's got, I think, like, he calls it the Shaw Video Center. And it's like a replay center. And he's watching all these games. He said he actually saw it live. He saw it live and reacted in a way you might think an official would react to something like that. And so they were on it pretty quickly. They had started to discuss it on Sunday, and then it just went Monday and Tuesday, just right wildfire through the coaching community. So I think they thought they had to address it in some way, or it was going to happen in other games and continue to happen in other games.
I am fine with changing the rule now in the middle of the season. You know, close a loophole before it ends up becoming an abused rule or something, you know, widespread. Because I don't consider it overly exciting for a 12 men on the field penalty to play a vital role at the end of a game. Right. So let's just eliminate that.
Yeah.
And let the teams fight it out.
I can't be, some people are getting all as purists. Change the rule. I talked to a couple assistant coaches, on Wednesday, and they were saying they helped me with my skepticism that this was done on purpose, because they said they would have been rolled out differently. But they were saying, especially at the end of a half, you can just wipe out a drive.
Yeah.
You just do it over and over and over and risk the 50-yard field goal. Like, it just, like, they were, that was already where they were headed to. Now, end of game might be a little more dicey, but end of half is going to, every end of game, you may not care. It's only going to matter in chances of victory, right? But at the end of the half, it's going to be every drive. That any time anyone gets the ball with 40 seconds left at the end of the half, you just put your guys out there. And all of that. The other thing I had no problem with, some people I guess did, like, it was this if he did it on purpose, I don't believe he did, was it unsportsmanlike or just smart?
Right.
If he did it on purpose, it was smart, in my opinion. I got nothing on that. Like, if you got the rule, the rule's the rule, run it. I just don't think I just think it's a great whodunit.
I talked to Shaw about that, the unsportsmanlike. Apparently, a while back, there was a game. It involved North Carolina. It was a few years ago. There were, like, at the snap, all of the defensive backs held the receivers, like, purposely held the receivers. And it burned clock, and the quarterback had to throw the ball away, and it burned clock late in the game. And I don't know, I think live, Steve Shaw was taking me through this play, and I think live, you know, they called holding or whatever, but it didn't matter. The same similar kind of situation happened where all the coach wanted to do was burn the clock up, right? And it did. Well, they released, I believe, that year an interpretation to that rule, and that was the unsportsmanlike conduct. So, like, they basically said, if this happens again, the officials have the opinion, the judge, the judgment to call an unsportsmanlike conduct. I don't know that that would have applied to here, but they have had that happen before when it came to, like, you know, pass interference, holding,
right,
that type of situations.
This was not blatant enough for that, because, I mean, you could just have 12 guys right out there. But
anyway. Well, in how about this, guys? The interpretation of the rule, you guys saw the last line of the interpretation, the little clause they sent out, and it's if the 12th defender was attempting to exit the field but was still on the field at the snap and had no influence on the play, then the normal substitution penalty would be enforced and they wouldn't have any clock adjustment. Now, of course, right when I like post that, right, immediately you get people texting or messaging me, oh, coaches are just going to tell their players to
run off
the field right at the end, right, so they don't get it. Wait, you know, we'll see.
Well, you could put 20 guys out there, totally confuse the play call. And the quarterback will just be like, I have no idea where, like, my pre-snap read is a waste of time. And then right before the snap, just have everyone start running off. Let me tell you what, if I was a coach, we would find every rule to cheat. Yeah. Every rule. That's all we would do.
We should have had,
I could see the staff would come in like, you know, Sunday, we're going to start game planning. No, we're going to start finding ways to cheat.
What if we tried this?
We're going to spend Sunday working on cheating. We'll spend Monday on the game plan.
Yeah.
That would be all it is. Just straight
Coach Wetzel
cheating. Let's do it. All right. We spent 20 minutes on the last game last week. All right. We'll be right back after this. We'll talk just a little game between Georgia and Texas. They're going to play some football. Austin. All right, look, we got to get to this week because it's amazing games. We'll try to run through a bunch of these, but Pat, I will start with you. Texas hosts Georgia, biggest game in Austin in a while. Texas wins this game. They really get into the driver's seat of the SEC race, might almost assure themselves a bid into the playoff. Georgia loses. Georgia obviously wins. They get right back in there. Georgia loses. Now they have two losses. Gets a little dicey. They do have a loss to Alabama. They do have this great win over Clemson. It's looking better and better all the time. So that's the playoff chase. This is what Texas wanted. They got kind of bored in the Big 12 and felt they were ready for the SEC. And by golly, they're favorites over the dogs. Thoughts on what's going on here and all the all that is at stake. We'll pick the games later in Race for the Case.
Yeah, monster game. Just going to be, you know, I think another great spectacle and a huge stakes showdown. Probably, the third major stakes game that we've already had this season. We had Georgia-Alabama, we had Oregon-Ohio State, and now we've got this one. And this is what Texas wanted. You're right that after a while playing Kansas and Iowa State and who so on and so on was not moving the needle as much for their fan base. They also get more money in this move, but you get more exciting games and you get to measure yourself. And if Texas is by God almighty as they portray themselves to be, you want to go in, you want to win the game, you want to show what you can do. And I do think they've put together the program and the roster to do this and to compete right away in the SEC. And to compete in this game against, you know, Georgia's been as good as any program in the country for the last 6-7 years. But Texas now is right there with them, and it's one more heavyweight in the SEC.
When I visited Austin for their SEC party, the welcome party into the SEC in July 1, they were talking about this game then, and it was a buzz then about this one. And the F1 race that follows on Sunday. Everybody was just talking about that weekend. Folks looking forward to that weekend. So it's been building up for a while since the schedules were released. And I'm guessing that the place is going to be incredibly electric this weekend. And I think it's probably the biggest as far as ranking matchup in Darrell K. Royal Memorial Stadium since Ohio State, number one Ohio State visited in 2006, a year after the Texas won the national championship game. It was 1-2, and the Buckeyes rolled them like 24-7 or something like that. So this is probably the biggest matchup since then. It's a primetime game. Yeah, like you guys have said, this is exactly what they wanted. It's why they moved to the SEC. Chris Del Conte, the AD, has been very clear about that. Like, the number one reason is your home schedule and getting fans in the seats and getting ticket sales and concession sales and all that. And so this is it. Prime time against the number five ranked team in the country. You know, you're number one. It has the makings for a big show.
Will you do an imitation of the Minister of Culture for us?
I'm sure
you don't even have to try.
He sounds
like him.
All right, let's flip this.
All right.
There we go. Georgia. I'm going to preface this a little like Ross and the devil's advocate. I'm just throwing out there. But how much does Kirby Smart need to win this game? They lose to Alabama late last year. They lose to Alabama. Now they like a second loss. And then the end of the season is like, they're on the tightrope after that. Again, they got this win over Clemson. That's really good. But this schedule, Florida doesn't look that bad. They got at the cocktail party. Georgia should win that. At Ole Miss, who the hell knows? Tennessee. Well, the Minutemen of UMass show up. How does UMass get? Well, how does UMass get in every one of these stupid podcasts?
I don't know.
Then Georgia's
the worst program in America.
I know. I mean, it's amazing. I don't set this up this way. I didn't schedule the game. Georgia Tech at the end, like they can't really. Three losses gets real dicey that you could miss a playoff when you were supposed to win it. And I don't know. I'm not, it just seems like this would be a lot of all of a sudden, like, what is going on in this program? If you look, they're not that good at stopping the run. Their D line isn't as good. Their wide receivers aren't as good. There's a ton of penalties on this team. It's not the Georgia team we saw a couple years ago. Now they may go out there and blow the doors off the Longhorns. I don't know. But if they don't, And I'm laughing saying this because the only team that's beaten them the last 3 years is Alabama, and they barely lost that other game. But Pat, is there anything here?
Not in terms of like
firing or anything. I'm not saying
not pressure. That's doubting. Yeah, there are people doubting. Oh, has Kirby lost it?
Grumbling.
Yeah, and this is the time when people will bring up more of the off the field stuff. And is the program focused? Is it out of control? Is that bleeding over into the on-field product? They, to your point, don't look like the classic really good Georgia teams. They're not as physical. They don't run. They don't stop the run as well. Their receivers, yeah, they've got issues there. They make mistakes. So it's not a super buttoned-up operation. Maybe that changes. Maybe they evolve still as the season goes along and they get better. But the schedule is so hard, you don't have time for it. If any team is going to get in with a 9-3 record, though, it's going to be Georgia because the schedule is incredibly hard. And they do have a linchpin win to begin with. And even if they lose Saturday to Texas and they lose one more, they've still got other good wins because you named off all the quality opponents. But still, Georgia, A, is not used to losing to anybody other than Alabama, and B, doesn't want this perception that the program has slipped. So I think Kirby will be hell-bent all week on having his team as ready as they possibly can be. We'll just see how ready that is.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention. You know, you start losing on the field, and folks start pointing fingers off the field. You start hearing more about the off the field stuff, and I'm sure that's what will happen as they go along. And if they start losing, you'll start seeing more and more, especially the fans probably looking at all the off the fields, all the arrests that's happened there, especially the driving situations there. Kirby's had quite a week. He kind of pushed, shoved on the sideline a Mississippi State player. He said it was an accident. He called the Mississippi State coach immediately Sunday when he saw the video, and I think he released an apology. And not only that, but he's obviously prepping for this huge game, but also he is on the rules committee. So Kirby has been dealing with, I'm sure not to a significant degree, but he certainly was involved in the rules interpretation stuff that came out with Oregon, which with his former assistant as well.
Yeah, right.
So
yeah.
Busy week down there in Athens. You know, the schedule, not to just belabor the point here, but the schedule is pretty tough. I don't know where their schedule ranks, like on like Sagarin or whatever, but it's got to be. It's got to be top 10, top 12.
And it's
got to
be number one.
Yeah, well, Florida's got a pretty tough one too at the end. Yeah, yeah. I mean, but it is. It's a toughie, and you know, at Ole Miss and against Tennessee, and even a Georgia Tech team that's greatly improved. None of those are easy for a team that barely beat Kentucky and struggled at times against Auburn, and obviously at one point was down 28-0 Alabama.
All right, the other SEC kind of intriguing. Someone's going to have two losses, and it may not be a lot of fun if you do. Alabama heads to Tennessee. Last time they were there, epic victory for the Vols. The goalposts ended up in the Tennessee River. One of the wildest scenes you'll ever see. This time Alabama shows up, and they are kind of, you know, both teams at one point of the season looked like the two, I think they both were ranked in the top four the last couple of weeks. Neither one's looked particularly impressive. Alabama lost to Vanderbilt and barely got by South Carolina. Tennessee lost to Arkansas and went to overtime. Yeah, overtime with Florida, so they barely got by Florida. This is a monster game for both squads. Pat?
Yep. I'm going to be there. Our Sunday show should be pretty good because Ross is going to be in Austin. I'm going to be in Knoxville, so we'll be able to bring some perspective from both of those scenes.
Dan's going to be at the bar.
Dan may be sober, maybe not.
Yeah.
Dan's Cafe.
Gasoline Alley Cafe. Or whatever. Yeah.
Always open.
That's the thing. You need a closing hour. Mm. Protect yourself. I think this is one of those games where the losing fan base just has an absolute nervous breakdown, that they absolutely freak because things are not trending the way they had hoped and the way that they were. Late September, we're looking like, hey, gosh, maybe these are the two best teams in the SEC at least, maybe in the country. And since then, whoops, things have gotten sideways. As you said, not just the super shocking upset losses that people didn't see coming, but then the really shaky bounce back game for both teams at home in games you expect them to come out with a fury and a high level of focus and intensity and execution, and it did not happen. Alabama's defense has problems. Tennessee's offense has problems. And I think the two teams and the two fan bases hate each other. So you don't want to lose this game from that standpoint. You don't want to lose from a playoff standpoint. And you don't want to lose the momentum of the season here and have people say, Kalen DeBoer, what the heck? Why did we hire him? Or on the other side, Josh Heupel was supposed to be our savior. What's going on there? Was he overrated? Was he a one-hit wonder? So there's a lot of pressure that goes with this game, and somebody's going to lose.
I waited kind of up into the last minute to book my trip to Austin because I thought maybe I would be at this game. As you guys were mentioning, you know, this one looked like a pretty big battle. And so I waited till after Vanderbilt in Arkansas beat Alabama in Tennessee. I booked my trip to Austin. But yeah, it was for a while. I thought maybe that I would go there. And honestly, you know, now – this is kind of an elimination game in a lot of ways, probably. When you talk about playoffs, even at 12 teams, I think you could make a case that two one-loss teams here meeting. And you got to think about these teams could be, at the end of the season, could be tied, you know, and you would think they would take the team that won in a head-to-head. And so, yeah, this even looms, you know, larger. I am scanning my social media here because there was a tweet from an Alabama beat writer, and God, I cannot find it. But it really, here it is, finally. It really puts in perspective Alabama's defense and how much of a struggle it's been this season. I'll read it. This is Mike Rodak of 24/7. Alabama's defense currently ranks 55th in yards allowed, which would be the school's worst finish defensively since 1998. Alabama has only faced one top 50 offense so far this season. Its next three opponents all rank in the top 50. Buckle up.
That reminds me. I got a good Alabama misery, defensive misery stat for you, too. They have given up 25 or more points three straight games. The last time they gave up 25 or more four straight, 19-55, and the coach was J.B. Ears Whitworth.
Wait, what was his name?
J.B. Wow. Ears Whitworth.
Ears.
Yeah.
Love 1950s nicknames. So good.
Oh, ears. Yeah. Ears.
Ears. Yeah, perfect. Yeah. Did they ever do that in the Saban era? Three straight games of at least 25 points?
They did. Probably the last, huh? One time. They did. The last three games of 2018 when they were playing great teams. I mean, they were scoring a gazillion, but they were giving up a gazillion. It was Auburn. All right, it was Georgia in the SEC championship game, I believe, and then Oklahoma playoffs. In the semifinal, and then Clemson in the final.
Yeah. Oh, they got Clemson. Clemson got them. In San Jose. Yeah.
Yes, yes. So that's the only time Saban did it. And, yeah, you go back. It's funny, like at various times, you know, having done this job for 400 years, you go back to like, oh, my gosh, Alabama's playing badly under Bill Currier. It's playing badly under this coach, DeBose, or whatever, and you're looking stuff up. Everything bad goes back to Ears. That was the worst period coach in Ears. The history of the school.
Coach Ears.
They replaced Ears with Coach Bryant.
Did they have good hire. Did they have the forward pass back then? I mean, that's a lot of points in the 50s. No, I'm like – All right. Well, we don't want Coach DeBoer. You do not want to be Coach Ears.
No.
Well, here's the thing. If Alabama loses this game, okay, so they've got the win over Georgia, but they're staring at Missouri next week in Tuscaloosa. They still got to go to LSU. And then they're at Oklahoma. You know, I'm not too worried about that necessarily, but the way they're playing, there's Mercer in there too. And then there's the Iron Bowl. And you're not going to get to the SEC title game with this many, like, so they can't risk another loss. They have the quality win over Georgia. Meanwhile, Tennessee, their problem would simply be they don't have much left other than this game at Georgia. So they lose here. They got two losses. They've got Kentucky. That's not going to help them. Mississippi State's not going to help them. Then they absolutely have to beat Georgia at Georgia. On November 16th, if they lose that, they got three losses and no good wins. So they got UTEP, and then they're at Vanderbilt. But like these are not, they don't. At least Alabama has opportunity to score a bunch of good wins to get back in this thing. I don't know what Tennessee has. So, plenty of pressure. Mm-hmm.
By the way, circling back, I went to the Sagarin ratings because I think strength of schedule is always easy or always interesting. Georgia's strength of schedule is 12th nationally. The number one strength of schedule, by the way, this shocked me, UCLA. The number two strength of schedule, USC. How about that? First year in the Big Ten.
Interesting. Off road.
Yeah, there you go.
All maybe right. Should have stayed in the Pac-12.
Yeah, maybe so. Strength of schedule wouldn't have been 1-2, that's for sure.
Nope.
Pac-12 strength of schedule is not 1-2.
No, yeah, they're not used to that. All right, let's run through some what else intrigues you? We got a bunch of games to get to here. Dan Lanning has just messed up our whole show. We had to waste a bunch of time.
His fault. Damn that Dan Lanning. Hey, I got one for you.
He delay a game to us. Yes, go ahead, Ross.
I got an intriguing like upset alert.
Oh.
Put your alarm up here in Notre Dame and Georgia Tech. Notre Dame playing at Georgia Tech. It's in the in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, which, by the way, the Georgia Tech game next year moved to Mercedes-Benz. Random side note, but I, you know, Notre Dame's got to win out. They 11-1 Notre Dame's getting in the playoff, and they got to win out. A 10-2 Notre Dame probably not getting in the playoff. I mean, I guess it depends on how things break, but with the schedule and not being in a conference, not playing in a conference championship, I would be surprised. So they've really got to win out, especially with the loss to Northern Illinois. So this is a big one. And Georgia Tech playing pretty dang well lately. And they kind of started this midway through last year, and they've played really well. We all know about, you know, they kicked things off and beating Florida State, but you know, they stormed back to beat North Carolina last week. They do have losses to Louisville, and they barely lost to Syracuse in a really good game up there in Syracuse. So look out, Irish. We have seen Notre Dame struggle at times to move the football, and it's something that Georgia Tech's pretty good at, it's defense.
Pat, you got one?
I do. I just want to real quick add Notre Dame, more injuries. You know, they've been hurt this year, and Benjamin Morris and their cornerback is out. And Brent Key is one of the upset dogs, man. I mean, he pulls them off, and he hadn't been the coach that long. But, yes, a couple of other upset dog coaches to watch out for. Jeff Brohm and Louisville hosting Miami at noon on Saturday. It's actually been pretty cold in Louisville this week for the first time since, you know, last April or whatever. Fortunately for Miami, it's going to be like a high of 72, so you can't really get them in a cold weather game. But this is a classic Brohm setup. It's a 4.5-point spread. You're bringing them in, sold-out stadium. Miami has flirted with disaster a couple of times. We'll see if Louisville can raise its level of play, makes fewer mistakes, and maybe take them down. And I got also another upset wizard, Michael Gundy. See if he can see out of both eyes after the headbutt from the cow. But if he's ready to go, Gundy has pulled more upsets, I think, than any active coach, if you go by point spread. And they are at BYU. And all credit to BYU. The BYU fans are mad at me because I'm picking Oklahoma State to pull the upset. Look, we got to pick some upsets. So I'm going with that one. But BYU has had a great season, but I don't look at them and say that's an overpowering team. You drop your level of play, Oklahoma State raises its level coming off an open date. I think they can get them.
Getting the BYU angry with you. Well, I'm excited for Nebraska to visit Indiana, which is the first time that sentence has ever been stated. maybe a volleyball game or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Nebraska's 5-1. If you remember the loss to Illinois, if Dylan Raiola, who's fantastic, but he overthrew a wide open, I think it was a tight end in the end zone, they convert that, they probably beat Illinois. They're 6-0 and 6-0. But Nebraska has been great. They beat Colorado. Last week they muscled it out against Rutgers. Who knows? And then obviously Indiana's one of the stories of the year, and it's going to be popping in Bloomington. They got to be fired up. It's a statement game for one of these two programs. Can Indiana run this thing to 9-0 against when they face Michigan, or 10-0, dare we say, when they face Ohio State, and at that point potentially have it lined up for a playoff bid? Or can Nebraska still make a statement here and compete? You know, there's a Big Ten title game potentially here, a bid. Just so much action. Two programs on the rise, and here we go. Big game in Bloomington.
Mm-hmm.
The mind reels at really what's laid out in front of Indiana. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
More upset alert. You know, when I start looking at this week's slate, a lot of top 25 teams are on the road to, you know, programs that are pretty good, if not at least decent, where you could see an upset. I mean, Pat mentioned the Miami at Louisville. I mentioned Notre Dame at Georgia Tech. But Kansas State plays at West Virginia. LSU plays at Arkansas. SMU plays at Stanford. And Texas A&M plays at Mississippi State. Now, Mississippi State of those are probably the worst team, but the Aggies, I think Mike Elko said this earlier this week, they have struggled in that series in Starkville. So there's a lot of like potential upsets here for road, you know, top 25 traveling teams to places that aren't easy to play and into programs that aren't terrible. Arkansas, West Virginia, you know, I think, I don't know how many of those, there's seven of them. I don't know how many of those are going to, you know, going to be upsets, but all of them. Upset alert weekend, Dan. Don't go apple picking.
No apple picking this weekend. Stuff's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the headline I put on the dash on this segment about the games. This could be the weekend when all hell breaks loose. I expect it. I really do. Another one. It's Missouri is at home, but they're playing Auburn, and Auburn has largely sucked this year. There's no doubt about that. But Hugh Freeze has got one in him. He always does, and they were within a 4th-and-31 of blowing up the playoff last year. I don't know whether this is it. Missouri had a basic walkover against the Fighting Dan Wetzels, but so they should be healthy and rested and, you know, probably spent half of last week preparing for Auburn. But I just – look, Freeze is going to get somebody. We'll see if it's the Tigers.
Couple more in the Big Ten. And this one's interesting, but they got two losses. But Iowa, they're going to Michigan State. I'm interested to see what Michigan State has in them. They're 3-3, but I think it's kind of a dangerous 3-3. Iowa's remaining schedules at Michigan, they have only one Big Ten loss at Michigan State, Northwestern, Wisconsin, there'll be a big game at UCLA, at Maryland, and then Nebraska at the end. They avoid Penn State and Michigan. Maybe you don't want to avoid them this year. Michigan State's AD is already complaining. This is the fifth straight night game for the Spartans, and they're having seven night games so far this year. All their home games are at 7:30 at night, which is tough. But
Nobody's ever happy with the game times.
Imagine the folks in Baton Rouge complaining at seven straight night games. They'd be throwing a party.
It's a little tougher at Michigan State when you're trying to get people to show up. So they have seven night games. They want a nice noon, nice 3:30. Get a little sunshine up there.
Big noon.
Keep cashing the checks.
Yeah,
man.
You're the one who wanted the checks. This is what you're going to get. And then the other is Illinois, is Michigan, Michigan visiting Illinois, right? Michigan's at Illinois.
Yes.
I don't know what Michigan is. Maybe they got a quarterback now. Maybe they don't. Illinois, they got to win this game if they're going to be serious. They're 5-1. So
yeah,
little statement. This would be an elimination game. Sure. And a big statement for the Michigan program because they're not used to going to Illinois and getting beat.
Not at all.
A lot of eliminator type games, you know, we're starting to see that, a lot of eliminator type games, and that would probably be another one right there. Both of those, I think, programs in a way are still alive. You guys looked at specifically SEC and Big Ten standings, and you just start mapping out things. And we talked about this a little bit on the last pod. You have these conferences have gotten so big. And this goes too for the ACC, I guess, at 18, and honestly for all the Power Four, I guess that everybody's at least at 16. Is that, you know, the teams, schools can't play each other, number one. Every school can't play each other. And so you start looking at some of these records, and I mean, there could be some serious bunched up in the standings at the end of the year. I mean, you could have 3, 4, 5 schools at 10-2, 9-3. Some league, one of the four leagues is going to have that, where you're just going to have these crazy bunched up schools. And then somebody's going to have to pick, the selection committee's going to have to decide, especially if it's in the Big Ten and SEC, who's the best out of these 3 or 4 10-2 programs.
Yeah. And then the commissioners are standing by to behead the selection committee when they don't like the results.
I kind of had a feeling that was coming.
Yeah.
I don't know. Behead's kind of old. Something else.
Injection. I don't know.
Well, there you go. A little syringe or something, you know. Yeah.
So a quick football-related people's court here before we get to the picks. Last Saturday, Penn State at USC, and a Penn State fan named Jordan Mott found out that there is a deal at USC that if you pay between $1,450 and $1,800 to the USC athletic department, you can earn, you are allowed to run on the field with the Trojans. It's called the Ultimate Trojan Experience. It allows one fan and one other guest to be escorted onto the field an hour before kickoff. Then as the team walks from its locker room down to the tunnel to take the field, fans who have bought the package are able to run out behind the Trojans. So you pay and you get this big moment, right? Pretty cool. Except he's not a USC fan. So he did it while wearing Penn State gear and cheering for the Nittany Lions, and then, of course, videoed it and put it up on social media where it has exploded in this this big thing. Mott wrote on Instagram, "We 100% did not expect for them to allow us to participate." He thought he'd get he could banished when he showed up in his Penn State gear. They said they've never had an opposing team's fan sign up for the experience. It was absolutely incredible. So he ran out. So I say, well, should USC allow this, right? Should they say, no, you have to be a USC fan to do this, and they should have banned Jordan Mott and his guest from running out in the field? Or do you say, hey, thanks for the money, we're going to buy a player to beat you? Justice 40.
All I hear is how much money they need. Everybody needs more money. Oh, my God, the house settlement. Oh, my God, we got to pay our coach $10 million, even though he's 3-3. Oh, my God, we got to pay more for travel across the country. Take the money, man. Let them wear whatever they want. Let them go naked. Who cares? Just if you need the money that bad, streaking. There's been a lot of streaking on fields. A lot of it.
It's not the first streak. Yeah.
If you get $1,800 a head for a streaker, take it.
Don't use the word head in streaking, please.
Oh Lord. It's too late. See when we do the pot at night. You see what happens when we do the pot at night. I got my lava lamp going back here. Yeah, it's cooking up.
If you're,
cooking. It's cooking.
Great look.
It's almost there. It's almost ready.
It's pretty sweet.
Almost ready. Yeah. By the way, did you guys see there was a rules interpretation change to this?
Lava
on USC's website. No. USC's website. There was a sentence added to the description. Of participants. The participants, because you can go on USC's website and do this. You pay about $1,500. And you can buy the experience and run out with the team. Well, on the main page, this comes from Audrey Snyder of The Athletic. The main page has a sentence has been added. All participants must be in USC apparel to partake in the game day experience. So they've already gotten to that. Did you see this guy? What is it? Jordan
Mott? Yeah.
What's Mott?
Yeah, Jordan. He even did a he got a FaceTime call from James Franklin, a thank you for supporting the team.
That's good. All right. So, I didn't realize that they had made a ruling. We were trying to help
them. They already changed.
I give them credit. I don't know what your opinion is, Ross. You may not have one on this. I would take the money. I don't care if they all run out. I'm with Pat. Take the money. I mean, as long as it's within some taste. Now, USC, I thought was...
Oh, no. You can't do that.
Yeah.
You got to make a change. You can't allow that. Think about all these opposing people that would run out, you know, just to do this, just to go viral.
If a Montreal Canadian fan wants to watch Bruins games in my basement with me, I'll pay me $1,800. I'll allow it.
Maybe. How about this? Here's my judgment, Dan.
Yeah.
If you're wearing USC or team gear, it's a regular price, $1,500. If you have anything else on, the price?
$5,000.
$5,000? Yeah, at least $5,000.
Yeah.
Why not? I like that. $5,000. I thought they were polite. They obviously should not have booted him out. They were nice people at USC for doing that. Let them, hey.
Yeah, yeah. Do it.
But now we've closed the loophole. Dan Lanning can't pull this trick. What stadium would you least want to try this? Like, which one would you catch an ass kicking before you even got halfway down that tunnel?
LSU. Tiger Stadium. Tiger Stadium comes to mind. Yeah. LSU comes to mind.
Yeah.
Alabama. I mean, any of those places. Yeah.
LSU, yeah, you are not getting to the 50-yard line alive.
Alabama's they're more just there to have fun. They want to sing their song.
Alabama would be, the security would be a problem. There's security everywhere.
The rest of them are frat. They're in their little ties and stuff. Yeah. I wouldn't want to do it at West Virginia. That Mountaineer's got a gun.
Ooh. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, musket. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ohio State. No, you're going to get, State, you're catching a beating. No. Mm. Yep. Ohio State means business. I don't know.
Florida would be, I wouldn't want to do it at Florida either, in the swamp. I'm not sure I want to do that.
Definitely some places in the SEC would be tough. Yeah, I don't know. LSU is probably number one, though. You'd catch an ass kicking if you tried to pull this.
At best, you would not live to midfield, and then they would skin you afterwards.
Feed you the tiger, right?
Yeah. That's right.
They got that tiger right there, just in case they need him.
He's right there across the street. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, they thought about bringing him into the stadium again this year.
They used to bring him to roar at the
– They used to bring – yeah.
He used to be positioned.
It's been an evolution.
Yeah, it's been a de-evolution
of the Tiger. Yeah, he was right outside the – I remember just when I covered the team. Yeah, he was right out – when I covered the team, he wasn't outside the visitor's locker room. By that time, they got rid of that. But
they wheeled him around.
I remember hearing stories back in the 60s, 70s, 80s of not just outside of the team locker room, Dan, but would literally throw red meat into the cage and let him tear up, and he's eating bloody meat. There's blood everywhere as visitors are coming out. I mean, it's crazy.
No,
crazy.
How it should be.
Now, when I was a kid and went to games there, they still brought him around in the cage around the field, and then, you know, PETA had to get involved.
Damn it.
$5,000, you get to feed him the red meat.
See? All these money-making opportunities, they need to just talk to us. We'll be consultants for you.
This would be it. If I was in charge, we would be cheating on every play and raising money.
How many emails am I going to get from PETA when this airs?
Yeah, you'll get them.
My favorite is the PETA every year at the Super Bowl tries to say we should ban football because of the pig skin. I'm like, I don't think this is going your direction right now. Seems like every year this game gets more popular.
Yeah.
I don't think they make them from pigs anymore.
I don't know.
Either.
Right. I think they don't. Cow, didn't
it's like
it?
Some kind of, yeah, leather. Yeah.
Is it an animal?
Yeah, it's still an animal.
It probably is an animal.
I don't know.
Yeah. This is a good question, Dan.
We know so much about football, we don't even know what the thing's made of.
We got to pick some games here.
Yeah, yeah,
all
we're
right,
late.
Cowhide, Dan. Cowhide.
Okay, whatever.
Or vulcanized rubber. Hmm.
Oh, my.
All right, I'm in first place. We'll be back right after this race for the case. All right, I'm in first place in this thing, 24-17-1. Pat and Joe both at 23-18-1. Ross, 21-19-2. Again.
Making a comeback.
Storm back.
We don't know we do not know what we're talking about, and look how easy this is.
It was like seven back.
Yeah, Ross, you're burning up.
We've all got winning records.
All got winning records. Let's see if we can maintain it. Nebraska at Indiana. Indiana's given 6.5. High noon. Fox. Pat.
Giving how many?
6.5.
6.5. I'm rolling with the Hoosiers here. They've been cover monsters. As long as they get off to a good start, which they have continually, I don't think the moment will be too big. You know, the concern is that if they finally have to play from behind, they might get tight, but I think they've got good players. They've got a really high octane offense, and they're going to score, and they're going to get ahead, and it's going to be up to Dylan Raiola on the road to see if he can bring them back, and it's going to be too much. Hoosiers win and cover.
Dan, the black shirts are back. Nebraska's defense does enough to win this in a tight win. Give me Nebraska to pull the upset.
When I was playing in college, I faced off with Cignetti twice when he was at Elon and he went as a JMU. Wow. They kicked the crap out of us both times. So I'm not betting against this guy. I'm taking Indiana. That's all the analysis that I need. I have put up with him too long. He's a great coach. I'm going to take Indiana.
All right. That's pretty good.
Joe, again, a knower of ball.
Yes. I'll take Indiana. Too much. It's going to be fired up. You don't walk into Bloomington and just win. 6.5 is a lot against Nebraska, though. Anyway, I'll take Indiana. It's too much fun. Miami giving 4.5 at Louisville, also at noon, ABC. Man, those are two good. Those are good noon games, man. Good games. Ross.
You know, we all know Miami probably should be 4-2 because of a couple of calls and things. They sit at 6-0, but they have problems. They have big issues, and I'm kind of with Pat on this being on upset alert type of situation. So I'm gonna say I'm gonna take the home dog. I'm gonna take Louisville to do enough to at least cover the 4.5, if not win outright. I just think Miami and Cam Ward just too inconsistent, and I think we've seen that their last two games, and in this one maybe they don't. You know, magically come back and get these crazy calls. I think this is the game where they might take their first L.
Yeah, they flirted with it, and I already tipped my hand. I'm taking Louisville here to not just cover but win. This sets up great for them. There's a lot of big time receivers in this game. Miami has great receivers. Louisville has great receivers. Miami also has a great quarterback, but he's also known to occasionally throw the ball to the wrong team or to fumble. So I'm going to say Louisville makes fewer mistakes, rides the home crowd momentum, and some of the playing with fire that Miami has done catches up with them.
I'm going against you guys here. I am not in on Louisville. I think that they're super overrated to this point. And I think you mentioned there, Pat, one thing with Miami, that they've turned the ball over a ton. Cam Ward makes a ton of mistakes. To get into the nitty-gritty of this, Louisville is one of the worst teams in the country in sack rate production, interception rate as well. They are not doing enough to pressure opposing quarterbacks. So I think Cam Ward's going to have maybe his cleanest game. And also they're coming off the bye. I think they can win by maybe a touchdown or two if they play their best game.
Sack rate got used.
Sack rate.
You're welcome.
All right.
Analytics.
I was like, listen, Miami's coming off the bye. They either ironed out the issues or they spent the whole time partying. Either way, it's going to be fun to find out. I like the Canes in that one. I also think I don't think Louisville's going to score enough points. I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, I got Miami. All right, Alabama giving 3 at Tennessee. Falls a home dog. 3:30 Eastern. ABC. Pat,
I'm going to take Alabama here. I think experienced. Proven quarterback in a big game, tough game situation. Milroe's playing at a better level than Nico Iamaleava is. And despite the crowd, despite the defensive issues, I think their defensive issues are canceled out by the Tennessee offensive issues. I am going to take the Tide here.
Yeah, that's... The last thing you said, is what concerns me for picking the home dog again, because I think I'm going to pick a lot of home dogs, and I am going to pick Tennessee. But that is a concern to me, is that Tennessee's offense has very much struggled lately. And I wonder against Alabama, although Alabama's had all these defensive issues, it might not matter in this one. But I'm going to take the Vols, a home dog. I'm with the dogs this week.
I'm with Pat on this one. I think Alabama's going to win this game. Both these teams have had their own separate issues, and I think Alabama's problems are less to do with a lack of – Tennessee's just doesn't have confidence on offense. It just feels super off. Alabama's just playing sloppy, undisciplined football. If this comes down to 4 minutes to go, each team gets a drive to march down and score, I feel more confident in Jalen Milroe than I do in Nico, especially after we saw Taylen Green, who's a less efficient passer than him, have a really big game. So I'm going to take Bama.
Yeah, the passing game hasn't been there yet for Tennessee. And that's really where you can exploit Alabama, right? their cornerbacks, secondary. And so I think I very much agree with Joe. I think this is a veteran quarterback in Jalen Milroe. I'm going to give him the nod, but boy, this is tight. This is tight. So I'll take the Tide, but oof, I would not bet this game because could happen.
Oh God, no.
I would not bet this game. I would be not surprised at all if Tennessee wakes up and wins and covers and all of that. But that's where we're at. All right. Also 3:30 on CBS, Michigan giving 3 at the Illini. Ross.
Well, we've seen Michigan's quarterback issues, and I don't think they'll resolve themselves this year. So Illinois covers surprisingly. To me, the surprise is that Michigan is favored at all in this game on the road. I know Illinois struggled with Purdue, but I think give me Burt and the boys to win it at home and cover.
You know, I was going down that road and I started looking into this a little bit, and Illinois' run defense is not good. And guess what Michigan does? Runs the ball. Illinois has given up 239 yards rushing each of the last two games. Penn State and Purdue. Purdue ran for 239 on them. So I can see Michigan lining up and saying, we are just going to smash it between the tackles all day. And probably shrink the game, which actually would be fine with Burt. Burt doesn't mind a shrunk game, but I just don't think they can stop him, get off the field enough. So I'm going to take Michigan there.
As much as that makes sense, I feel like Michigan, though, is not turning to that run game as much as they should be. The quarterback situation is such a mess. Random stat for you guys. Michigan doesn't have a single receiver that has over 100 yards receiving on this year. Their leading receiver is Colston Loveland, who's their tight end. They can't move the ball through the air. And then on top of this, whoever's playing quarterback, I don't even know who's starting this game. I'm sure that they're going to make a change midway through like they've done every single week. But Xavier Scott and that Illinois secondary has been picking off opposing quarterbacks pretty successfully. So maybe whoever's starting has a couple of picks, and that's what helps Illinois win this game.
Oh, man. Has
going to Uncle Jack,
rate.
Aren't they?
Yeah, his sack rate doesn't even know who the Michigan starting quarterback is.
Well, does anyone know who the Michigan quarterback is?
Jack Tuttle, 25-year-old, seventh-year right. senior Jack Tuttle.
How much do you want to bet that another quarterback plays in this game outside of Jack Tuttle?
Oh, well,
yes, they'll play more than one. Alex Orji on 3rd-and-2 and 4th-and-1 and blah, 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 but.
Jack Tuttle will give them, you know, something reasonable. I always wondered why he was hurt. I always wondered why he wasn't the starter, because they just need something slightly competent. He's from California. You know who else was a Michigan quarterback from California? Tom Brady.
Do not put them in the same sentence. My God.
Jack Tuttle and Tom Brady.
Nobody thought Brady was going to be any good.
Danny been drinking over there.
Not yet, but it's time. It's time.
Been a dance
go
cafe a little bit.
Blue. I'm sticking with Jack. There we go. You never know. You never know. Let's make some.
We got to do Georgia, Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget the big that one. Game. That game. Oh, we just whoops. Georgia, Texas. Forgot
I'm better
about it.
In the morning. I really should have started drinking. Georgia at Texas. Texas is given 3.5. 7:30 ABC. Pat.
Boy, it's a hard one to pick, too, and I don't think I would bet it either. But I'm taking the home team here. I just feel like Texas has established itself as a very complete team, and Georgia has too many questions. This feels like one of those games where the team that runs the ball better wins, and Georgia has not run the ball well enough and not stopped the run well enough, so I'm going with the Horns to win and cover a pretty small, manageable spread.
Yeah, I wouldn't bet this one either. This is a tough one going back and forth. In the end, just going with the home team at night, loud, rocking environment. I'll take Texas to cover it, but this is one where I wouldn't be surprised, right? If Kirby and the boys play their best game and get a win here, but give me the Longhorns to cover. I'm not feeling good about it, but there you go.
The situation kind of reminds me of what happened with Ohio State, where they kicked the crap out of everybody. They're leading every statistical category. And then when they faced off with Oregon, a couple of their deficiencies showed up. It feels so off to me if Kirby has two losses to this point in the year. Maybe that's not super sound logic, but I might be the only person going with Georgia. I'm going to take Georgia to cover and win.
Texas ain't played nobody, Paul. At least no one with an offense. Michigan and Oklahoma do not have quarterbacks because Jake Tuttle didn't play. Jack Tuttle. Sorry, Jack. Oh, man.
Jack's Georgia. Old. He doesn't listen to podcasts. He only listens to like AM radio.
Too cutting edge for him. Georgia has not been able to stop the run. I feel like saying this is just going to be proven so wrong. Like, how did you possibly say this? But I don't like Georgia in the trenches.
Yeah.
And that's their thing.
Mm-hmm.
I hate 3.5. Why isn't this 3? Why isn't this 2.5? Don't bet this game, but take the horns if you have to. I'll go with that. Lone dogs. Who got lone dogs?
Joe did.
That was me.
I already regret my pick. Pick a lock of the week. Who's got one?
Last week we were 4 for 4. We made people money. That's right. Parlayed our locks.
The parlay worked this last week.
Praying for anyone who's willing to put that parlay down, but it worked.
Yes. You're making unwise decisions with your money, but hey, ride with it. I've got one. And I guess this is a lock of the week, but I'm out there taking a bit of a flyer. I said it earlier. I'm taking Oklahoma State, getting 9.5. You are going into Provo. Not an easy place to play. BYU's been great at night, but BYU's on a 6-day turnaround. They played Saturday. This is a Friday night game. Oklahoma State had last week off and probably had to do some soul searching because they've lost 3 in a row. And Gundy has never fully lost his team in his career. So I don't expect it to happen now. I expect to come out and play the best they have played since the Arkansas game. And I think Oklahoma State not just covers the 9.5, but may win outright.
All right.
Well, I said mine earlier. Notre Dame at Georgia Tech. Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Yellow Jackets playing well. Georgia Tech is an 11.5-point underdog. I think they easily stay in there. This is a tight one. Give me the Yellow Jackets.
My pick this week, I'm going with Rutgers, the hometown team for me here in New Jersey. 4.5 versus UCLA. This is a noon kickoff. The Bruins are flying across the country to face off with Rutgers here in New Jersey. I've made that trip before, having to come home for the holidays when I was living in LA. It sucks. Waking up probably 4 o'clock body clock for this UCLA team, not to mention the fact that they're 1-5. They're playing sloppy, mediocre football. They're decent along the line of scrimmage, but I think Manungai is going to run all over them.
4 a.m. body clock. He's still rocking in L.A. at 4 in the morning.
Not the, just
but
UCLA
then you
got to
stay up till 5, 6, 7, 8,
yeah.
9.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, that's a good pick. So I was tempted to go Colorado is getting 3.5 at Arizona. It's just kind of delicious, but Travis Hunter's back. But it just feels like lock of the week and Coach Prime's program doesn't really mesh.
Yeah.
I'm going back to the well here. The Red Raiders have been good to me. Texas Tech giving 6.5, hosting Baylor. Baylor has not been very good. Texas Tech has. There's a lot for the Red Raiders to play for. They're 5-1. I think they beat them by more than a touchdown or more. I'm going with Texas Tech. I think I've won at least one with them as my lock of the week. Lubbock, bring the LBB. We hope this pays off. It's my lock of the week. All right, that's our show. It's been long. A lot happened. We'll be back late Sunday to discuss all of the excitement. It's going to be a wild one, I guarantee it. We're going to have a tough time keeping that one within an hour. But we appreciate everyone listening, subscribing, telling your friends about us. Season's rolling. We're having fun. Talk to you later.